who do you want to criticize today? Or who do you want to laugh at today? And we discussed this in the pre-show. It's like, you know, they have like $19 million, you know, in salaries, yeah, in a year. How do you expect to disrupt the world, to revolutionize the world, to make a dent in the universe if you're not in the Silicon Valley? I mean, seriously.
Yeah. How are you going to disrupt the world from your home in Spain? What are you thinking? Come on. Grow up. Get an office.
I get lots of questions because, you know, people recognize Nosby as this like small success, you know, small lifestyle business success, startup kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Not really startup because 9 years old. Well, so they ask me questions about the VCs and about funding and about, you know, all these things. And today we are recording earlier because you are going on vacation. So it's Wednesday.
Well, not exactly vacation. I'm going to be presenting about programming stuff in Warsaw.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Today we are recording earlier because Radio is our, you know, a keynote speaker, you know, visiting lots of Swift conferences. And he's the only person in the world with like 5 years of Swift experience. And, right?
So says my t-shirt, yeah.
Exactly. So so you're going to Warsaw again, right? In 2 weeks?
Yeah, I've been last week on Monday, on the day Apple had their keynote, and now I'm going on Thursday this week, on the day Tesla has their keynote about Model 3.
Yeah, and as you know from our past shows, we like Tesla. I own Tesla stock. One unit of Tesla.
You own one Tesla.
Exactly, I own one Tesla. And we are very curious about the Tesla Model 3 because Tesla Model X is freaking expensive and they are going to launch a Tesla Model 3 for the common people, for the common man.
We'll see about that. I am very curious about the price, but I don't think we'll be able to watch it live. I think the keynote will start at 6 a.m., not p.m., a.m. our time on Friday, actually. We're getting distracted. What are we going to talk about?
Yeah. So anyway...
we're going to criticize someone today.
Yeah, let's criticize someone. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Because, you know, ranting is the best sport ever. Like, you're really... right? Actually, just before the show, news came in that one of other companies in our productivity space, Asana, just raised $50 million in venture funding. So we would like to extend our congratulations to Asana for raising so much money. Good luck to them. And it's actually a good topic to talk about our business, their business, and the VC business, and the fact that we have raised $0 of VC money, and we are 9 years in business, and we've been profitable from day one. Because in the beginning, it was my side project, and then it was my full-time project. It was already profitable when I hired the first person. So I actually could, you know, pay them from, like, the revenue, you know? And now we are 20-something people. We are still profitable. We are still not raising any money. And, and I think in the total, we have more customers than Asana.
Yeah, maybe. That would be cool.
Yeah.
So essentially, you're running a lifestyle business, are you?
Yeah, that's the idea. And we like our lifestyle, right? I mean, you know, we do the podcast, you know, we have fun. We do like this, you know, we are developing, you know, all these apps. Yeah, it's a good lifestyle business. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but...
It really makes me chuckle that a lifestyle business is something people say to make you feel bad.
Yeah.
I mean, how awesome does it sound? A lifestyle business. I want that.
Exactly.
Why wouldn't anyone not want that?
Yeah, but apparently, you know, lifestyle business is not something people want because you're not swinging for the fences. Like, you want to be dominate the world. And the thing is that Asana, with raising $50 million, with the VCs, like just like the Wunderlist, our other competitor, was also raising some money from VC companies until it sold to Microsoft.
Yeah.
And the thing is that VCs think that, you know, one of the apps can dominate the productivity space, right? Mm-hmm. And And, you know, throughout the 9 years I'm running this and we are running this, I've been asked several times, you know, Michael, aren't you afraid that at some point somebody will just, you know, have so much funding and they will just dominate the space, that they will just kill you? Yeah.
And it never happened.
I missed that. Maybe. I don't know. But the thing is that, so there are several, like, there are several lessons from that. We don't want to just criticize Asana because, you know, I mean, really, you know, good luck with them and good luck, you know, for the VC companies there, really. But we want to just point out several things. So one of the things, just the first thing, the only person who can kill myself, who can kill me is myself. I can kill myself, really. That's the only option. I mean, okay, unless somebody really, you know, does something really bad to me. But really, I mean, the business.
Yeah, I think our competition are not this kind of enemies.
Exactly. So, yeah, so no. Really, it's hard to say, it's hard to really have a competitor really to, you know, kill me. You know, even, I mean, even if you think about it, you know, Asana is free for like for small teams, you know, and Nozbe is not free for small teams. So, So when Asana launched with, you know, being free for small teams, I got lots of emails saying, you know, Michael, it's, you know, aren't you afraid? You know, people will migrate to Asana and everybody will abandon you and Nozbe will just die. No, because it's not that simple, you know. It's hard, especially for productivity, I think, too. It's hard to dominate anything because it's a very personal tool. It's a very, like most of the tools are very personal. You have to learn how to use them. You have to like to use them. And it's hard to create a tool that fits everyone, unless you want to have, like, the Microsoft Word with, like, so many toolbars that, you know, really, you can really customize it the way you want. But it's really hard to dominate this space because there's no requirement for to be standard. There is no standardization or whatever. Like, there is really no, it's really hard. And and I think both Asana, Wunderlist, you know, Todoist, Nozbe, all of these apps, all of us, we are still competing most of the time with people using email and post-it notes. So really, I think this is our biggest competitor, not each other.
Yeah, I agree. And we talked about it briefly before, but there's just so much working in our favor in terms of competition in the productivity space, right? Like, you don't need a lot of resources. You don't need a lot of capital to create a productivity tool. It's not like making a smartphone or a car, right? We can be a company with 5 or 6, I always forget, programmers and 2 designers and some, you know, sort of support people. And we can compete.
Yeah.
And really compete on in the first league, right?
Yeah. And I just had an interview with one of our, you know, business customers. We just launched the Nozbe business. And one of the first customers, like, who bought the license for like 20 something people right off the bat. I mean, it was crazy. Like, it was the biggest sale ever we had. And and I talked to him and he said, yeah, I just moved to Nozbe from Asana. And I was like, really? From Asana? Yeah, because Asana has an iOS app which actually blows. It's not really that good.
Yeah.
And your iPad app is really good, syncs with the cloud very well, and your iPhone app is very good. And I was like, wow. You know, somebody just, you know, like, we have this VC-funded company there, you know, from Silicon Valley with, you know, Facebook CTO, ex-Facebook CTO running it. And we have, you know, us, you know, a few people, like a bunch of 20-something people running Nozbe, and people choose us instead of Asana, you know? And for merits, not because, you know, he likes me or whatever, you know, because our app is just, you know, in like, for him, for his team, like, in his circumstance, it's just better for him.
Yeah. Don't flatter yourself, though. You're not 20-something.
Yeah, I know.
So anyway, you don't need a lot of capital to do it, right? It's relatively simple. That's one thing. The other thing is there are just so many possibilities, like so many ways you can make it and so many valid ways in which you can make it to fit different teams or different people, different minds, right? That's another thing.
Yeah.
The third thing is there's not a whole lot of network effects. The biggest size you'll be working with is a size of a team or a company, but there isn't such a thing as with, you know, your Facebooks and Twitters and YouTubes and other things like that have just massive network effects, making a sort of environment that favors one or maybe two big players. There isn't such a thing. There's this thing that most people are non-consumers, so there's a huge market opportunity for everyone.
Exactly.
And we mostly compete with non-consumption and not with one another. You mentioned someone that switched from Asana to Nozbe, but actually I'm pretty sure that happens rarely. Maybe someone will shop around, try a few things, but there's another thing. Once someone finds something that works for them, there's usually pretty big lock-in. And not that like it's impossible to get your data out. It's not even about that. Just that, you know, if you find a system that works for you and you have so much data in there, it's usually like whatever. It's not worth it moving, even for a small benefit. I actually have this.
Yeah, the app would have to really, you know, annoy you like to that right. extent that you would just, all right, I'll just move this data.
Yeah.
You know, but apart from that, you don't want to do that.
Yeah, and for us, a software as a service kind of company where we have people pay us every month, it's quite hard to get someone on as a customer, but it's also like pretty hard to get out. As in, it's just, you know, like you'd have to be really pissed at it to feel like, you know, let's move. It's usually just, you know, not worth it. I have this relationship with iTunes, which really annoys me, but it doesn't annoy me so much that I would switch to Spotify or whatever. It's just, I've been, you know, curating my collection, et cetera, for such a long time. It's like, whatever.
The thing with, you know, shopping around, there are like some pro users, you know, who analyze, you know, the difference between apps and everything. But as you said, non-consumption is our main competitor, really. And the market is really huge. I mean, you know, like they have, I don't know, they just announced that they have like 10 or 12,000, you know, customers. We have more customers, but
that's nothing.
Yeah, we have more customers, but we have smaller customers, right? But if you think about it, you know, we have 300,000, you know, total users. Like, if you think about it, it's nothing. You know, Apple is selling 70 million iPhones in a quarter. You know, I mean,
a quarter,
right? So like in a year, I mean, they're like 1 billion, like with, you know, billion iOS devices active right now. You know,
1 billion. This is an insane number.
Exactly. So if you think about it, like there is no chance like anyone would kill anyone, you know, in this space. We have still, everyone has still so much to conquer, you know. It's amazing how much we still have to conquer, you know. Like just iOS devices. And I'm not saying, you know, the Windows and all these things. And we have apps for all these platforms. So as you said, network effects are not there. That's why I'm a little bit curious about also the VC companies funding, you know, such companies. I mean, like in the case of Wunderlist, they founded them to sell them later to Microsoft, you know, so that they had their exit and everybody's happy and everybody got their, you know, paycheck. But like in our case, we don't want to sell. We don't want to, you know, just go to anyone. We want to have our lifestyle business and we want to grow. And now the fun part. So we have this no office, you know, thing, how we work. So not only we have people working in Nozbe from Poland and from, you know, from, you know, a few other places in the world. We don't pay for an office, so we have this cost out. So, you know, we can use this money in a, you know, wiser way. We don't hire people from Silicon Valley. And just think about it. Asana is like has 180 people in the valley.
180 people in the valley. So they have to pay them probably, what, the cost for them? 100,000 a year? Maybe more.
And just think about it. You know, in San Francisco, you have to pay like $3,000 for like, you know, a single, you know, a room. And I don't know. It's crazy. I mean, it's the most expensive place in the world right now, you know, San Francisco.
I just today listened to the newest episode of Frederick on the Line. And I just chuckled so hard when they said that in San Francisco, it's cheaper to just sleep on your bags of money than actually rent a place.
Exactly. So just think about it, you know. We discussed this in the pre-show. It's like, you know, they have like $19 million, you know, in salaries in a year.
In a year. $19 million for salaries. This is ridiculous.
So I think they have to really have more customers than what they have now to really like be able to just pay for that, you know?
Yeah. And like the fact itself that they would take VC money at this stage, and not some like, you know, huge investment or an IPO, but 50 million of dollars of VC money when they probably have 20 million a year of their costs and salaries, that's kind of worrying, because it suggests that they're probably not profitable.
I'm sure they're not. I mean, with the amount of customers that they have, it will be hard for them to be profitable. You know?
Yeah.
They would have to, like, everybody would have to pay them $1 million a year to actually, you know, more than that, actually. So
right, and in the sort of internet community, we've been burned so hard so many times by companies making really cool, really great things, truly amazing things, but funded by VC money, and then the money runs out, or they have to sell to Facebook, which shuts them down or keeps them neglected forever. And it's just me. I might be biased by sort of seeing all this stuff, but as a user, I'm kind of skeptical to get on like a product which I use, I rely on, that's VC backed. I don't think, wow, they got so much money, they must be great. I'm like, oh, they're not profitable. What if they continue not being profitable?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, there's going to be that bad for them. I mean, you know, but maybe that's their bet. I mean, because they have so much connection with Facebook, maybe really the VCs are betting on the fact that Facebook will eventually acquire them for some reason. Although I wouldn't think so, because why would Facebook acquire a project management application? You know, I mean, it's not really a social network now, is it?
Right. And the move with Wunderlist and Microsoft was interesting, because Microsoft got quite good about their, like, they're really serious about their productivity services. And I think, I might be wrong, I haven't been following it closely, but I think that Wunderlist is still well maintained, and it's still like actively developed. It didn't go down the black hole acquisitions of and go. So that's good. That's good for Wunderlist and their users. But
I mean, for now.
Yeah, but I mean, first of all, who knows what happens next? But okay, say Asana wants to sell to a bigger company, but continue actually having their product and keeping their users happy. Who they are going to sell to? I mean, Facebook just doesn't sound like a good fit. Microsoft would be a good fit, but Microsoft won't acquire Asana when they have Wunderlist. It makes no sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there would be IPO, but IPO would have to be with like strong financial numbers, and I don't think they have any. So,
well, would they in Silicon Valley? Would they have to have strong financial numbers?
Yeah, but as you said, network effects. Asana doesn't have network effects. I mean, any app like ours doesn't have network effects. So so there is like, there's the growth potential is not as strong as with, you know, any other tool like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think what Salesforce, which is also about kind of product, it's also kind of productivity space, IPO'd and they went quite large, but they also relied on their Salesforce, and I think they mostly like sold or marketed at least to like enterprise, and I don't think they are profitable, or at least like they were in pretty bad situation financially, as far as I know. I haven't been following that closely either.
Well, so anyway, I don't know, and it's, you know, I don't care really. And in what I really like about this, I mean, what I really like about this and about, and this is, it might sound counterintuitive, but what I like about our competitors growing and getting funding and getting press and everything, is the fact that this brings attention to our space.
Yeah.
This brings attention to our, you know, market, validates our market kind of way. And, you know, brings those people who use sticky notes and emails to collaborate to actually, you know, to actually start using our tools, you know?
Like, look, most of the people I know don't use Nozbe. And it's not because they use Wunderlist or Todoist or Asana or Basecamp. They just don't use such a system at all, right? And often I feel like when you show people the utility of that and show them just how useful it is and how it really helps you get everything done and not forget about anything and etc., then the awareness, not just that such a thing exists, but this is something you want, is very powerful. And some of them, you know, would then go to our competitors, but some of them wouldn't, right?
That's why, you know, that's why it's really cool that these kind of tools get attention. I mean, that we get attention, you know, that, you know, our competitors get attention, because then I hope people would start using our tools, because I really believe, sincerely believe, that using post-it notes and you know, using email to collaborate, you know, doesn't scale, and it's just a recipe for failure. That's why, yeah, this is good news. I'm really, again, I'm happy for Asana. I'm happy for what they do, and I'm happy for our space.
Yeah, same here. Oh, I remember what I wanted to say. It reminds me of Apple and the concept of share locking, which is Apple making a competitor to you know, to an application, to a company living in their ecosystem, and sometimes Apple doing that proved fatal to those small indie companies making cool apps, but oftentimes it didn't, because Apple made a very simple or dumbed down, depending on your point of view, versions of features of other apps, and it only brought attention. So, for example, I remember Marco Arment talking about you know, his fear about the Safari reading list when it was introduced some years ago, but it didn't hurt Instapaper at all. It helped it, because people started, you know, saving things for later in the reading list and notice, wow, I want this, but I also want more. And then they would discover Instapaper or one of the other tools whose name is I forgot.
Yeah,
right?
Like Pocket.
Pocket. Yeah, that was it.
That was the same thing when finally Apple introduced Reminders. I was like, yeah. Finally, you know, so cool. Cause
compete with us.
Yeah, compete with us, you know, create reminders, you know, people start using to-do lists for like, and then they will quickly discover, okay, I mean, for some of them, it will be enough and that's fine. Yeah. But for some of them, we'll be like, okay, I already, you know, out-reminded reminders, you know, and I have too many and this doesn't make any sense. It doesn't scale. I need something better. You know, there is Nosby or there is something else. I'll check it out. Yeah. I'll go there. So, or for example, I have somebody, you know, using Android. I want to collaborate with them, you know, through tasks, and, you know, reminders doesn't, you know, work with that. So like all these scenarios, but really having these tools integrated, you know, the same with Google Tasks, you know, Google Tasks is nothing, you know, it's like, I think somebody's using it, but really it's not something you would mention talking to other people, you know, about competing, you know, productivity apps, because it's like it's a simple thing that you would use in the Gmail, along Gmail, but not really a tool that makes that is like really for professional users. So that's the good thing. Again, it proves the market, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, like a friend of mine some time ago started using Todoist, and at first when I saw that, I was like, betrayal.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm really happy for him, because he found a tool that really helps him get more organized, and like he doesn't use nearly you know, a fraction of the capabilities Nosby has. So, you know, he checked it out and felt like, okay, like it's maybe like he wants something simpler. Right, like he mm-hmm. doesn't collaborate with anyone. He just wants a simple list, and he wants his, you know, subtasks and all the things that we decide not to do for other reasons. But like, yeah, I mean, maybe you know, eventually he'll see that he needs some other tool. Maybe not. It doesn't matter. But I'm happy that he started using a tool. Right. Something better than Post-its.
Yeah, and that's the idea. I mean, that's the idea. And again, coming back to Asana and coming back to the VC funding, not talking about productivity tools, but like as such, you know, I get lots of questions, because, you know, people recognize Nosby as this like small success, you know, small lifestyle business success, startup kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Not really startup, because 9 years old, well. So they ask me questions about the VCs and about funding and about, you know, all these things. And yeah, so first of all, Well, it all depends always, because you know, if you want VC or you don't want VC. But most businesses don't need VC because most businesses are not meant to dominate the market. You know, they're not meant to, you know, to be this, you know, thing that will just, you know, sweep everyone else. So that's the first thing. Second thing, I think what Jason Fried once wrote on Creators of Basecamp, you know, we're big fans. And again, Basecamp is one of our competitors. Yay.
Yeah.
So Jason Fried once wrote that, you know, when you start to learn to collect money from people, when you start to learn, you know, to be profitable, to, you know, it's a good skill, you know, because if you think you can go, you know, with free app, free thing, you know, waiting for, I don't know, money to come from heaven, I don't know, from the sky. It's hard later to actually start to monetize later, you know. It's, you know, when you start to learn, you know, it's a different mindset. And it was different mindset for us, you know. It was very hard for me to put a price on Nosby and start selling it. It was very uncomfortable, but I learned to do it. I learned to appreciate it. People learn to appreciate to pay, actually. And many people, when they come to Nosby, what you just said, they feel like they're supporting a privately held company that is profitable, that will stay in the for the long run, that will not seek, you know, going away from, you know, and it getting, you know, IPO'd maybe, but not really being sold to anyone. It's run by us, and it will stay around. It will stick around with their to-dos and projects around, right?
Yeah, I don't think most people or normal people look at that, but it is might be a useful thing to look at, especially with tools you rely on. Because I mean, of course, I'm super biased, so I'll admit that. But it's kind of a reassuring when you look at a company that never took VC money, was profitable since day one, and has been in market for 9 years. That's more reassuring that a big company backed by big names and big money, right? And like same is true, and that has been part of the inspiration, I'm sure, with Basecamp and 30¢ Singles, where like Basecamp has been around since 2004, I think.
Yeah.
So what, 12 years, and the company has been around for now 17 years. And they also never took VC money, right? And they're so proud to talk about the, you know, how their old versions of Basecamp, the Basecamp Classic and Basecamp 2, that they will maintain them till the end of internet. I mean,
yeah,
that's like such a reassuring thing to hear.
Yeah, because, you know, as you said, you know, once you invest in a tool, once you put all your to-dos there, your life there, and we discussed about this, I know when I'm with Nosby Business, we have really businesses, you know, being run through Nosby. I mean, they have all the business data in Nosby that, you know, helps them, you know, day-to-day running of the company. You want this, you know, you want the companies to stick around. You don't want them to just shut down because of something, you know, and
right.
It's really important.
Right. And back to the money and the VC money and the lifestyle businesses, it really reminds me of this phrase from Amy Hoy, 30 by 500. This is hard, 30 by 500, which is this idea that, hey, if you can make a tool that people will pay you as a subscription every month for, like make something very useful, something niche. Collect $30 from a customer and find 500 people from the entire internet, okay? Apple has a billion users, sells 70 million iPhones each quarter, and you find from the whole internet 500 people to pay you $30 a month. That makes $180,000 a year. That's pretty good, right? That's a pretty good lifestyle business, and it doesn't take that much. It doesn't have to. You can make a big company with, you know, 200 or God knows how many customers and take VC money just to keep floating, or you can start a lifestyle business where you just start small and bootstrap your way and, you know, find just 500 people, and maybe you don't live in San Francisco, maybe you don't have any employees and you don't even need those $180,000 a year. Maybe you don't even need that 500 users or $30 a month, right?
Yeah. And again, another thing, you don't have to be in San Francisco to actually compete with companies from San Francisco, as we exactly. already discussed, you know. You don't have to be there. But if you want to take VC money from San Francisco, you have to be there, because the VC companies are very old school. They want you to have an office, you know, like in the 20-mile radius from their headquarters, you know, because they want to be able to visit you. They want to be able to see how their money is being spent, and and they want to see the beautiful office that you just built for the, from their money. You know, they want all this, and that's nice. But again, like, base camp is from Chicago, and they are Chicago, so they're not in Silicon Valley. We are, you know, originally from Poland, but we are, you know, around, and we don't have to be there to compete with them. And this is also the beauty of the internet. This is also the beauty of being self-funded, and of being the lifestyle business, that you choose how you want to run the company. Nobody tells you that you have to do it like that, and you have to build this office. We don't need the office. Yeah, but I gave you the money, you have to build the office. Like, no.
Yeah. I don't think we'll ever stop making fun of Silicon Valley for this, that they're so high-tech, so disruptive, so, you know, the future, and they're so
old school,
stuck in their old ways, and thinking that they have to be in this awful city in one place to be successful and to make money.
The most expensive city in the world, the most expensive. Like, really, why? and they are building all these communication tools. You know, they are. This is amazing. I mean, and yeah. But that's the life.
I mean, obviously, you have to be physically in San Francisco to be able to make an information productivity tool. I mean, how logically could you achieve it any other way?
How do you expect to disrupt the world, to revolutionize the world, to make a dent in the universe if you're not in the Silicon Valley? I mean, seriously.
Yeah. How are you going to disrupt the world from your home in Spain? What are you thinking? Come on, grow up, get an office.
Yeah, from our homes in Poland, you know. And the fact, as we said, and the fact that we don't want to have a large company to be able to serve large number of customers. We don't need that. And actually, right now, as we discussed, you know, in Sopot, we are right now investigating all these new technologies to be able to actually save even more, like not save more money, but save from hiring, you know, people, but like trying to get more automation, more better tools to be able to serve our customers better, to be able not to hire, like, for example, 5 sysadmins to administer our servers, but to actually use the newest technologies to be able to administer the servers, you know, by themselves, you know, with scripts and stuff, you know, and there are so many things that can be done like that. That you don't really need the so many humans running the business, but the humans that you need really smart humans, and that's the good part. So I'd rather have like a small company with really smart people than have like really large company with not so smart people.
Really large people?
I don't know. It didn't sound right.
No, I was actually going to talk about the same thing, but before we go to that, I just wanted to add one thing. You mentioned that most companies are not like that, are not going to conquer the world with VC money. But this is important it's obvious, but it's important to remind people of selection bias, okay? You hear what you hear, but that's not representative of what the world is actually like.
Exactly.
Like, of course, if you're in tech scene dominated by Silicon Valley money and press and products, you'll hear so much about Silicon Valley things, but you don't have to be that, and you don't have to be a part of that. And I think it's, you know, it's one way, and you're free to pursue it as an ambitious entrepreneur, but you don't have to. And I think it's destructive when, you know, the new generation of entrepreneurs thinks that this is the only way, and that you can't do anything interesting unless you move to San Francisco and get a boatload of money.
Yeah, totally. And also, this reminds me of, for example, all these startup meetings that meetups that I used to go to. Like, for example, you go to the Swift meetups, right? Why you go there? Mm-hmm. Because you want to share the knowledge. You want to share, you know, the experience of writing Swift, you know, of your 5 years of Swift experience. So this is why you go there. And I used to go to these meetings of, you know, startup founders, you know, in Warsaw, and I loved it. Because in the very beginning, it was about us. It was about our companies, how to build them, you know, what to do. We were sharing experiences. We were sharing our knowledge. We were trying to help each other build our companies. Now, most of the time, it's like there is the moment to pitch the investors, the pitch, you know, the VCs. And the VCs are there. And suddenly, these meetups are not about building companies, building businesses, building value for customers. They're about pitching investors, finding money, searching for, you know, big bucks. Like, I don't like it. I'm not interested in that. I prefer to have like a circle of founders, you know, still exchanging ideas.
Yeah, what a waste of human potential, is it?
Yeah, and we discussed also that on our in support about our company structure and about, you know, a legal entity of our company and things like that. And I mentioned that, yeah, I have to deal with that, but it is so boring. I don't really want to. I mean, I will have to because I'm the CEO, right? So yeah, I will have to.
Just for context, the point is that Nozbe is a single proprietorship. Like it's this form of a company in Poland where the company is you and you are the company. And it's not how real companies are made, but this is how it started and that's how it's going, and who cares?
Exactly, that's the thing. So I'm not a serious company, you know, with serious structure or whatever. But you know, it's been serving us well. We are 20-something people. We are running fine. And at some point, I will have to change a little bit the structure of the company or something. But this is boring. This is something I don't care about because it doesn't bring value to my customers. My customers don't care about my office and don't care about my company structure. They care if my tool works and if it helps them get things done. That's the only thing they care about. So think about this. If you have a startup and you are searching for VC money, you're not focused on building value for customers because you're focused on finding the VC money. I mean, and it's hard to do the two things at once. Believe me, I know. I've tried.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. The only thing that the customers did kind of care about is that for the longest time, because of, you know, you were doing things as a company before Nozbe, and so you had a company called AppyVision.
Right.
And then people got in their bank statements got charges from something called AppyVision.com, and people didn't know what it was, and they were confused by that. So you changed that, but now, I mean,
it took me so many years to change the name of the company, really, because again, it wasn't such a big deal. But it wasn't such a big deal. It was a problem for some customers, but it wasn't a big deal. But finally, we decided let's do it. Like it's gonna take, you know, time and administrative, you know, tasks to get it done. But let's just do it so that we are all called Nozbe and it's fine. But that's the thing, you know, these are boring things that don't really, you know, don't matter that much to the customer.